asked to place in as priority?
Sure, okay. Once again, it would be family life. That's one. Okay. And I'm going to write these down as I'm saying this. Okay, money. Leisure activities. I presume that means playtime. Okay, work.
Portrait. Now listen close. This is my information, misinformation or not to you. Jersey might talk different. I feel somewhere in between incredible naivete and beyond trash whenever I'm feeling New Jersey. It's Sandy, who I'm eating in Little Italy with, casually remarking that not only is this the place where Gallo was shot to death last spring in the middle of a mafia gang war, but that her father was a mafia numbers runner in Jersey and murdered when she was 12. Working the graveyard shift, getting off at 5 a.m., and me and my girlfriend going down to the Hudson to watch the sunrise, only to chance upon five long black limos hanging out. Were our imaginations so vivid, stories told to us so great that we could just see dead bodies in cement blocks, or what did we see anyway? We didn't stay long, I'll tell you. It's my first restaurant job, a diner on Route 4, Holly's Chicken in the Basket, to paid off the health department. I was so green, but I was fast. I couldn't handle today what I learned on then. At least 12 tables in a soda fountain specializing in 52 flavors way before Baskin-Robbins. We had a real soda jerk named George. I made a best friend there, Maria. We both took philosophy courses and were always trying to figure out why my mother was dying of cancer and why she had to be smuggled out of Lebanon and eventually flee to the U.S. And what was God, if there was one, trying to do anyway?
She was a visitor. 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 She was a visitor.
Jake looked fairly around him without care for anything but the disbelief that this is really happening to him. There is no choice but to go back to the first idea so long ago, in front of that it felt like an unhappy marriage. It longs for the happy ending. The room reflects his disfragment of the dreams that are his ideas gather dust. Yet he is not without hope, observed for a moment, placed a room and lucky dip. There are very few options that will not generate a tangent, never to be finished. Led way to hold his feet to the floor, sometimes traversing the options.
Thank you. long silence, long silence. With mouth breathing and panting, no words nor nothing like words, pretended to be asleep, didn't want to embarrass him. But fuck me, the pins and needles after that. Millimeters closer to the door of the room, still feel the time and the space, must not need for that room. Now it's time, now it's night, now it's time, now it's night, now it's time, night. Why did I desert this? I hadn't had time since my emotional. I wondered whether I hadn't had time since my several senses.
The gallery grew out of a working with artists in a publicational sense. We made books with artists. They were illustrated by artists. It came out of the residue of concrete poetry and a view of poetry which I think was imagist in essence. And by the end of 75, it was obvious we needed to have a space to show developing work by some of those artists. And I think as soon as the space developed, we provoked other artists into using the space in a certain way. We have now made the production of books into one separate function and the gallery into yet another. I think this has just been a way of relieving the tension in the situation and clarifying the policy in both instances. And also I think we're beginning to, with the gallery, to look more towards Europe now as a means of access or to get work out in a way that I think we're pretty hemmed in England. I mean, I think we're hemmed in by our collectors, by our public institutions and galleries, in a way that I think there's a certain freedom in Europe to recreate a situation. I think we've got to look to that. And that's precisely where I am in my own thinking with the gallery at the moment. And I think it's going to be always difficult in London for us because of where we are and because of the critical status of journals and writers. We've had a lot of very wonderful emotional support from critics and people in journalism in this country, but we still yet have to find our critical force in this country, and I think that's not unique to Coracle Press. What I think is unique with a gallery that's actually trying to do as much as we are hasn't found this critical accompaniment at this stage. I'm talking predominantly now about the gallery because that's the force of my interest. I mean, the books are taking their own form. They're actually covering themselves. We're making books for lots of other situations besides our own. perhaps you could just talk a little bit about your particular sensibility when it comes to making shows for Coracle Press.
I think the sensibility came out of using what one had at one's disposal. I think one started to make books on that principle many years ago, maybe 20 years ago, that you could make a book with what you had around you. I think the space at Coracle Press Gallery has dictated a lot of the sensibility of the shows. When we renovated the building in 75, we were very careful to leave it as it was. It's a rather beautiful Edwardian shop, or now a pair of Edwardian shops together. It's really a question of working with two factors. The artist whose work one can see gelling in one's own conscious mind, and also artists who would fit the space. And there's a sort of mesh at work of these two factors, I think. Plus a huge desire, given that these are kind of very curious domestic spaces, to keep the space as a preserve, which is not really like an art gallery at all. I'm interested in artists whose strategy doesn't only work in the art gallery as well, I mean, for whom one has to coordinate their activity through a space like Coracle, although the activity is not contained within the space. It's really a very particular problem, I think, with sort of some sculptors that have come up in England in the last decade. And obviously that's a point at which probably the books begin to inform the situation again. I mean, the information involved with those artists is probably as well presented in the book as any other form.
Terms like an alternative underground fringe, in many senses, perhaps could quite wrongly be applied to Coracle. Certainly they couldn't be applied now. But perhaps the situation has been that what you've done has been so specifically independent of predominant manifestations in contemporary art that it's appeared like that.
Yes, I think one missed it head on, as one missed, personally, for me as a poet. I mean, I miss concrete poetry. I mean, it was after the event. One digested aspects of those things and used them. I think it's purely a question of use and awareness of them. Sure, I think Coracle fits no bill, really, at all, finally. I think it's just its own model, which won't fit into any other situation, really. I think it's also, even though I use terms like underground, I think it's always been very upfront. I mean, it's been just the very brightness of the space on the street, and the number of people who tell me that they only look at shows from the bus as they go past. I mean, there's always been this really open quality about the situation, both spiritually and, I think, physically, geographically even, for that matter.
So, in a sense, I suppose you're defining Coracle as an artist's-run gallery.
I think it's a difficult term, and I think it's not clearly the case. I mean, the artist galleries that exist in this country are few and far between. I think probably I could only list the predominance of three, I mean, being Matt's and Graham Murray's in Edinburgh, and this space. And they're all very different versions of this kind of phenomenon, which I think might find a much more close parallel in Germany and France, perhaps, and Holland. We've had to take account of viabilities of many sorts to actually keep the gallery afloat, especially in this country. I mean, we're aware of the commercial world to a certain extent, although the gallery's not a commercial gallery per se. I think it misses yet again all these head-on definitions of itself, but I think it's more aware of itself as an artist gallery than perhaps any other kind of gallery, just by the very nature of the primacy of ideas, and the ideas about exhibition and strategies about exhibition, I think, are the reasons for it being an artist gallery.
The location, the strategy, the artist, the exhibition, the gallery, the space, the directory. The Directory of Exhibition Spaces, published by Arctic Producers, P.O. Box 23, Old Simpson Street School, Sunderland, SR4, 6DG.
What do you know about Canadian art? Why don't you come and find out more at the Canada House Gallery in Trafalgar Square, London, where there's a new exhibition every month. There you may see recent work by a painter from Toronto, video productions and installations from Vancouver or Montreal, sculpture from an artist living in Quebec, a group show from Alberta showing recent work from a particular region of Canada. Come and see what is happening in the arts in Canada at the Canada House Cultural Centre. Phone 01629 9492 for details of our current exhibition. That's 01629 9492.
The John Hansard Gallery, the University Southampton, SO9 5HH. Exhibitions of contemporary art and photography.
David, you've been director of the Experimental Arts Foundation in Adelaide now for nearly a year. As a starting point for this conversation, perhaps you could define how you actually approached the job of being director, what particular areas you have attempted to develop, and then perhaps go on to talk about some of your aims for its future. But we could start off by perhaps looking at the last year. You know, where what have you done perhaps that could be seen as different from the way in which Noel was operating the foundation?
Well, in the last year, or beyond that, in the last few years, there's been a growing concern amongst artists to be much more accountable for their actions, work much more closely with a broader community. Perhaps the growth of artist books and documentation that becomes printed in runs of 1,000+ is indicative of that. Putting out people's or artists' statements of intent and the results of that of those actions and that intent to a much wider audience to communicate in Australia, which is a very vast place, so that ideas can actually surface in other cities and other centres, other nodes. Part of that has been a growing concern to be working more closely with the public, to work outside of galleries rather than in galleries, rather than places where you might just refine work, to take that refinement out. Within that, there's been quite a growth of community arts activities in Australia, and we've become part of that in that we have a community arts officer attached to the AF in Jude Adams, and her first task was to coordinate the Lovely Motherhood show, which went to regional centres as well as to be located here in Adelaide, and to attract many more people than would normally have come to the EAF, a different group of people with different sensibilities. So I think that's one new function that the EAF has taken on, and it hasn't replaced any other. It's been an expansion of activities, and it's been carried on in the same way as other activities. That is, that it's a place for analysis here, that people can refine ideas, put them to other people so that there's feedback to them.
Obviously, when the Experimental Art Foundation was established with Donald Brook and a number of other people, and it became a new model within the Australian context, and was a concentration of a lot of material coming from everywhere in terms of a resource centre, which you say you have, and the notion of experiment and experimental was a very apt way of describing its activities. But if one were talking about experimental in a sort of scientific sense, one would also be carrying with that notions of the application of the experiment when something arose to be applied. I'm just wondering whether the sort of the initiating philosophies now have served their purpose and perhaps are shifting to some extent, and whether you see perhaps the initial concept of an experimental foundation as being something that's becoming or could be seen as inappropriate.
I think there's two ways of approaching the notion of experimental art, and within the avant-garde model, the conventional model of art, artists as individual, there's still people coming through this place all the time, new people, graduates from art schools, people who are just making a run for it. They've been working for a while and have got a certain sort of coherency with what their investigation's been about and go for it. Those people will, for a period of time, go from one experimental action to the next, where it's not so much goal-directed, but it's more to do with an open-ended pursuit. And that's fine. That's terrific. I think there's also another way to approach the notion of experimentation, and that is in finding models of application of work as well. I mean, there's a whole area of the unknown in there, and it's quite open-ended. And ways in which artists can become more active within developing policies, decisions for the whole society is an unknown step as yet, and I think it's one that is yet to be made, but there's certainly been the dance around and the approach to it to be part of structuring political parties' policies in the arts, to work within unemployment schemes, to work within local councils or government projects in residence or as part of a consultative team. There's a whole area in there where there's a very valuable set of sensibilities that an artist carries with them, and a very valuable refined thinking process, thought process, creative thinking, a lateral thinking process, a trial and error process mixed with a bit of daydreaming, that is one that the dominant model, the explorative model of the society, perhaps can become more tolerant of or incorporate in as being... I mean, it's a very broad-based society we have. It's got an enormous mixture of ethnic backgrounds and there's the Indigenous Australian culture that have to start influencing what sort of decisions are made, and decisions have to consider more parameters, and one of those can be a quite a different approach, a quite a different model that's developed for approaching this land than the explorative model. Now, that doesn't come down to individual experimental actions in that avant-garde notion. It comes down to quite a degree broader approaches to society, changing whole institutions, changing whole structures. And I think that within that, the Experimental Art Foundation can become quite a significant part of experimental modelling. I mean, not talking about models of thought or perception. Well, it is talking about that, but not in a narrow sense of per individual, but in fact on approaching large groups and institutions.
When we first started to do this, when we first approached, well, say, like local authorities or new towns or anything in the sort of late 60s, 70s, none of this was at all easy, because they only had one notion, which was entirely to do with patronage and sponsorship. Well, such a lot of work has been done by APG, for which actually there is no credit put forward at all by art organisations in this country. In fact, they just absolutely don't mention it. Anyway, it's probably not even very easy for the, you know, those residences and schemes to go in just easily. Now, there's still quite a lot of work to do on the re-education thing, although a lot has been done by APG's examples and what we've been able to do, and they've learnt a lot from it. But the actual brief that we're pushing in is, of course, considerably more difficult, but once being grasped, has a very heavy enthusiasm equated with it.
Well, I just really wondered, beyond that, whether the fact that it is still possible for institutions to engage in the patronage of artists by giving
works
them placements, whether in fact
point,
it makes it more difficult for you.
It does indeed. You know, what has happened as a result of a lot of these Arts Council schemes, I mean, in this country is, well, two things really. One is we're actually having to counter a subsidised option. Now, that's a straight financial thing that works against us, because there is actually no money for us to do any work at this time in this country. You know, the only money we've got is to do work on the continent. Any other work that is done is just done on guts.
The negotiations you're undertaking at the moment in Europe, do you see those as a natural progression for APG as an organisation?
Yes, I do. I mean, as we progressed from industry to government departments, you know, it's a natural progression to go to countries because it's to do with holistic systems and the notion of the artist in the decision-making process is one that we'd been working on really from the beginning. And it wasn't, you know, there's quite a tricky area here about why are you dealing with authority? Why don't you come up from the grassroots? Now, there's a lot to be said about that, but it is a natural progression, and it's particularly a natural progression at the moment, nothing to do with our difficulties in this country, because the feeling that Europe is there with all that nuclear debate going on, you know, is an added reason why we should be right in there. Why I don't like to use the word should. Why it's necessary, as E.P. Thompson says, for all of us to get on in there, get your hands dirty, and get on with whatever field it is that you operate in. That you bring your field of action into the action area. I mean, that's what I feel about it. I feel there's authority in the behaviour of how people respond to the idea. So I find authority in the behaviour of willingness and wanting, whereas I sometimes think that notions of authority are where the authority has been invested by the state or something. So I have two sorts of authority, for me, are operating.
Yes, I mean, obviously this relates quite closely to feminism and feminist ideas.
It's been very important to me, all that. I've been really working out over, particularly in the last year and a half, why I'm in there doing this thing, why I've done it. I felt a lot was done on very, and I will say, I've had very good instincts of what to do next, what to put together. Oh, I see where they're, you know, when I'm listening in a negotiating meeting, I can hear instantly, well, I say I can hear, I usually get a very strong intuition, oh, I see, that's where that's working. Yes, we could work with that without any loss of principle. And, you know, those sort of things I bring in absolutely like that in negotiations. Now, what I've found that I've been operating with all the time in this is between expected goals and making statements about what is it that you want. And, you know, we have to keep coming on to that. But I've also noticed the very, very strong power of not knowing and finding out, and that's absolutely all right to be operating on that.
Is there any way in which you feel able to measure the success of a particular project? And secondly, do you have any feelings about whether APG has been successful?
With regard to success of getting to and finding out how to actually deal with and learn the ways of the bureaucracies and the administrations, I think we have been very successful. We've put enormous amount of, well, I say very successful. We've put a lot of work into how they work and what it is that we as artists are needing to do to maintain the autonomy and the power of our medium relative to them. So a lot of questioning and a lot of field work has been done on that interface. And I think on that, I'd say we've got a lot of experience, and that's why I regret the lack of use of that experience by our establishment here. Another measure of success for me is the amount of change that that comes as a result of the whole operation, from the very first negotiation that one does right through a placement, the points of confrontation where changes occur, I would say is a measure of success that I look for.
To begin over again.
Could one also begin over again with a desire to examine it in terms of its economic, social, and historical origins during the first industrial revolution, material technology informing the making of a photograph as a cultural process? Together, both might provide a context for comprehending its symbolic process, a process defining it in terms of that fundamental social and economic transformation. Together, both might also produce a frame within which its current sociocultural and historical pattern could be mapped.
And in the complexity of its history,
by what procedure would one begin this process of mapping,
as this process of tracing the apprehended matrix fabricated according to a desire to negate the surface which it has constantly presented to its subject in constant flux, a subject which it has successfully presented to an apprehending world as photographs?
To begin over again.
What contemporary photographic practice has suppressed and repressed the historical understanding of the photographic process in favor of its ultimately performative uses? If so, and then, could the photographic process be viewed as a closely intertwined complex,
together,
a shifting and more wider process of historical thesis and contemporary contextual antithesis,
in which,
and because of the photography, material, ritual, and associated symbolic characteristics,
might also be the form of symbolic rituals as well as
then in the first resistance photos of historical art,
could be viewed in terms of
the first photographic entrance between its origins and aspirations in this process,
or the form of man has its words,
its ideological past, and its utopian future.
From this point of view, the practice articulated by these notes,
the photographic production situation would be informed by an aspiration towards revolutionary change,
and hence it would imply utopian mentality.
In its most positive sense, this mentality would characterize an attitude in contrast to a condition of false consciousness, which would transcend or conceal the present, when it would pass over into conduct which would tend to shatter either partially or wholly the order of things prevailing at the time. In contrast to the utopian mentality, Mannheim also developed a parallel and contrasting notion of ideology. In this case, he extended the classic Marxian notion of ideology into an evaluative, dynamic, general, and total conception of ideology, which basically would be orientated towards the past by failing to take into account new realities applying to a given situation, by attempting to conceal them, by approaching them by means of categories based on previous historical situations. It would be evaluative because it presupposes certain judgments concerning the reality of ideas and structures of consciousness. And it would be dynamic because these judgments are always measured by a reality which is in constant flux. Photographic activity, even as it aspires to utopian ends in its most positive sense, is ideologically complex. It is framed within a historically determined system of rules as a ritual process of production. As Coward and Ellis have noted in another context, ideology produces the individual in a relation to representation within the social process in which he or she is situated as an identity, a point of self-reference rather than a process. As symbolized by its product, for example, the photographic process also reproduces itself as a fixed identity and presence in the form of a conventional photograph. In this case also, the support for a subject content would be perceived for the most part as circumscribed, neutral, and transparent.
I mean, the question is, how do you see yourself in a regional situation in relation to the centres of art, the art world centres, so-called, and the sort of internationalisms that are going around at the moment?
All art that is done in the consciousness of the basis where it happens or where it is produced. So to be aware of one's own roots is, I think, very important for the artist who does works, but also for the galleries who represent those artists and when they bring artists into the country. I just don't want to be highbrow to look, or what I would say, to pray to the big centers, as well as I try to find out what happened there. I don't have these hierarchies of where it happens and where it doesn't. I think it happens everywhere, and it's just a question of concentration on money and profit thinking. And I think this, it's of course you meet a bigger audience in a big surrounding, in a center, but in the same way, the quality, and that's not a criticizing a quality. It's the differences of the audience we have. It's the same important for those people who live here that you try your best and you work on that. I mean, is that you wanted to know?
Well, so in fact it's a two-way process. You're actually feeding energy out as well as receiving energy,
yes,
from the so-called, yeah, centers.
It's the interchange I am interested very much.
Hier ist das Kassettenradio Mono Multiplay und in Stereo. Monatlich eine 90-Minuten-Sendung im Abonnement. Und nur.
It started in 1965 when a group of artists and art critics, a friend of mine, decided to find a place for activity. And that time it was the first gallery with a group of avant-garde artists, different generations, like Tadeusz Kantor, Henryk Starzewski, who is now 88, and also young artists who joined us. And we started with the program quite independent, even from the outside scene in art, which we didn't know enough. We never went to the West at the time, and the communication was not very strong. So it was quite innocent activity. And I remember it as very alive and developing. We decided to go against the traditional way of exhibitions. It means we decided not to organize the exhibitions of certain works, but the exhibition as a whole thing. It draws us easily to the notion of environment, but we didn't know nothing about that notion at that time. And we establish a sort of short, I think quite serious, theory of place. And that time Tadeusz Kantor started with his happenings in Poland. There are very well-known some happenings organized by our gallery, as the Panoramic Sea happening organized by the Baltic Sea. Another one was called the Letter. So after these activities as environments, as activities like happenings, which were interventions outside the gallery, into the street and in the space, we started with another program, which was directed against the gallery itself, because we observed that our behavior became quite soon very normal. Again, we organized exhibitions, and again organized vernissage and private view and critics, and all those habits returned. We started to become more and more professional as gallery runners. So we started to select the documentation, to put all materials into special boxes, and then we found that we have hundreds of boxes with different subjects and with a lot of materials. And it was our notion, a little bit contradiction in terms living archives. So the living archives exists until now, but it has become dead archives, like all other archives. So we went recently, a few years ago, to the notion of the collection. the collection is quite big, I think, in a potential sense. It doesn't mean that the normal activity of exhibitions should stop in the gallery. I would like to continue after this longer break, but it will depend very much of the situation in our country. But it means that the hierarchy of our activities in the gallery has been changed. At the first place is now the collection. At the second place is still the archives. And on the third place is the organizing exhibitions. So this is the gallery which maybe will stop exhibitions in future, because it's not possible to continue forever.